Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I'm just two big holes. Phoenix Arcana Lightwood.
And I'm a hideous sewer monster who meows like a cat. Siren Rex Fry. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze and review representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture.
Today we're talking about Charmed Season 1, Episode 19, Out of Sight.
The title is half of the expression out of sight, out of mind, which means when you can't see something, you stop thinking about it. Eh. The original title of this episode was supposed to be Blindsighted, which I think would have been a lot better, but okay.
According to IMDb, this episode rates 8.3 out of 10. That's solid. This is the one where when a young boy gets kidnapped by a Grimlock, it's up to Prue, Piper, and Phoebe to attempt a dangerous rescue. This episode was written by Tony Blake and Paul Jackson and directed by Craig Zisk. I think I'm saying that right. Zisk. I like this episode a lot. The Grimlocks are one of the few monsters on the show that I think are actually kind of scary looking and creepy. Other than that, they're all kind of like leather daddies, and, you know, I'm into that too, but just not in the same way.
Yeah, you're not creeped out by that at all.
It's also a coming out of sorts. It's like a coming out episode, kind of. And we finally get to put an end to the gaslighting of Andy Trudeau.
So this episode is kind of a pivotal moment for season one. It really sets us up for the climax of the season.
Yeah, it really does. And, I mean, Prue gets outed, which is, like, not fantastic. It serves a purpose, for sure, and it does sort of set up what comes next in the finale of season one.
This episode definitely does deal with the theme of being outed. And, you know, we've talked a lot about how, like, witchcraft in pop culture is often kind of a metaphor for queerness. And I think that's really relevant in what we're going to be talking about today, because Prue is struggling with someone discovering her secret, and how is the people that she loves going to deal with that, and are people going to treat her differently, and are people going to show up on her front lawn with torches and pitchforks? And you never fucking know.
You really never know.
I like this episode because I think that this is a great example of an ensemble episode. Every sister has their own relevant storyline going on in this one that not only affects the climax of the episode and the battle with the demons, but also their own personal character development. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, I think that Out of Sight is a very good Charmed episode.
I can agree with that. I can agree with that wholeheartedly. It's a great ensemble episode. And we've talked a lot about how in the beginning, they're not really great at that. They're not great at the ensemble stuff at first. So speaking of all of the sisters having a relevant storyline, The episode opens with something really irrelevant to anything we've ever seen them do before, ever.
The episode opens at a child's birthday party. Jesus Christ, what did we do to deserve that?
Ugh. Gross.
Ugh. Absolutely not.
Piper may or may not want to have sex with Josh, but she's hung up on Leo. And this episode, it's like this first scene is attempting to be really sex positive, but it's definitely outdated. It's definitely outdated. Like, they're operating under the assumption that sex equals a relationship. Yes, there are people that choose not to have sex outside of relationships, which is totally fine and valid. But having sex with somebody does not automatically mean you're in a relationship with that person. And also, what sex talk ever has to do with listing your prior partners? That would take far too long. Just tell me if I'm going to need a trip to the clinic after and let's get on with it.
Yeah, I think that's a straight people thing. Or a people who aren't whores thing. So obviously you can't relate either way.
I've never had a conversation where someone is like, so how many people have you had sex with? I'm like, let me get out the fucking Rolodex. I don't know.
I can count it on one hand.
I cannot.
Dead serious.
The thing is, every time I try to like recount my sexual escapades, I always forget somebody. There was this guy and then there was that guy. And then I get done listing it. And then half an hour later, I'm like, oh, and I blew that one guy in a park that time. Like,
you've lived such a full life.
So Piper is hosting this party that they're at for some random fucking kid we've never met before named David.
And his mom is stoned out of her mind. Tell me that Dee is not stoned out of her mind.
Well, I didn't pay that much attention to her, to be honest, so I don't really know.
She's crazy. She's not there. I mean, maybe she just, like, was a terrible actress with no lines whose scenes got, like, cut all to shit. Like, that's possible, but I swear to God, that actress was high on set that day. There's no way that she wasn't. There's no fucking way.
So, David runs up and is annoying, right? And says they're playing Squish the Squash. I've never heard of this game before.
Okay, Squish the Squash is what he says. It's so politically correct for Smear the Queer, which is this game where, like, I don't know, like, you're the queer and you have a ball or something, and then all the other kids beat the shit out of you because they're homophobes. I think I have that correct.
Why is Piper always doing this charitable shit? It's exhausting.
Yeah, definitely unrelatable.
She's always doing stuff for other people. Bitch, stop!
I don't know. Like, I also have high anxiety like Piper, and it never motivates me to throw children's birthday parties. But what can you do? So, this predatory white man, I mean, monster... No, I meant what I said. This predatory white man lures David into the woods by pretending to be a cat. That would so work on me, by the way. Immediately. Like, kidnappers out there listening, if you really want me, just meow in the bushes and I am there. Okay? I'm all for it. This somehow puts him in Prue's path, even though she's trying to leave the park, which prompts her to uselessly use her powers in front of a generic, ambitious reporter guy. The monster opens a goddamn portal in the ground and disappears, and Prue is just like, well, fuck.
That fucking... Looney Tunes looking asshole in the ground, though.
Oh my God, that's exactly what it was.
I have seen some rough looking holes in my day, but that was painful to watch.
Oh, girl.
What the fuck was that? That was just like, that was some of the worst CGI I think I've ever seen. This is another instance of them just not being able to catch anyone ever, because Prue, even though she dropped them, she was right there. She just stood there looking at her hands.
So they're gonna say in a minute, oh my God, Prue, it was the first time that you've ever moved something with your hands instead of your eyes, and that's why it shocked you into pure uselessness, and you just let a child get kidnapped. No big deal, Prue. You didn't completely fail for some bogus reason. I'm kind of a narcissist and obsessed with myself, so I've been re-listening to our earlier podcasts lately. Yeah. And so I just listened to the part where I talked at length about how Prue is moving stuff with her hands in the first two episodes. So if you've been following along, you know that I'm already pissed about this. But she definitely has done it before.
She has definitely done it before, but I would also argue that she moved stuff with her hands like her entire fucking life.
What a brilliant point, Phoenix. Make sure you cut that too.
I don't know why that tickled me so much. I've been up too long. After Prue definitely should be blaming herself for losing this child, we get the opening credits.
A song is playing that I don't care about, so moving on.
David's mom, Dee, is crying in a police car, even though it's pretty clear she has no idea what's going on. Like, not a single plant. She's like, she's not even, like, fully crying. It's like, she's just frowning really hard and touching her face a lot.
Well, she's really, like, overwhelmed. Like, what's happening? Why am I in this police car? Do they know I'm on drugs?
God, you know? Damn it. I need another Adderall. Where's the diaper bag?
And then Phoebe has way too much information that she allegedly got from an investigator who was questioning her. And by that, we mean, like, just giving her his life fucking story. But basically, a boy disappeared here yesterday, too, and it also happened 20 years ago. Here's this information, random witness. And, you know, then we talk about how Prue never channeled her power through her hands, blah, blah. Piper wants to tell Clonopin Mom that she's a witch, and Prue is so over it that she goes to work.
We haven't seen Prue go to work in a couple of episodes. I want to point out that all of the sisters' outfits in this scene in the park are ugly. The jackets are not good. The outfits underneath the jackets are not good. None of them look good whatsoever.
Well, they're pretty ugly. But I mean, what do you wear to a kid's birthday party? I don't have anything appropriate for that.
You know what you wear to a kid's birthday party? You don't go.
You heard it here first. Fashion advice from WBR. Just skip that event.
So we get this disturbing scene of David being pinned down by the two white-faced monsters in the sewers, and they magically steal his eyesight. And David calls out for his mom after he'd been blinded. So not only do the monsters steal the eyesight of children, they also make them stupid. stupid.
No, kids just come that way, I hear.
Oh my god, is this gonna be an episode where we just rag on kids the whole time? I fucking hate kids.
Just turn the podcast off now, breeders. You are not gonna like it.
Phoebe does some internet research from like 20 years ago on the web, as she says.
On the web.
Which, I mean, I don't think that checks out. I don't know how she would be able to find that information from the 70s on the internet in 98.
Yeah, I'm super suspicious of that. Well, I guess, like, I mean, there was a period of time where people were all like, you know, let's scan newspapers, like, into computers and, like, back that up. But I don't know.
It just doesn't really check out for me.
I'm not buying it.
And Piper's preparing to binge eat, which, like, same. I had a really stressful day at work yesterday, and I came home and I got stoned and ate, like, a lot of McDonald's, so.
And do you know, I wasn't even hungry yesterday, but you just texted me the word cereal, and then I ate half a box with my bare hands. True story.
I did have cereal late last night, too.
Yeah, me too. Duh.
Yeah, I feel you, Piper. I feel ya.
Yeah, so, but Phoebe on the web tracks down this blind man based on a 20-year-old newspaper article that allegedly exists on the internet. And the more I think about that, the even harder I'm finding it to believe, because she gets his name. And, you know, there are laws about including the names of minors in, like, crime stories and stuff like that.
Oh.
Yeah, so, like, especially, like, if someone is suspected of a kidnapping, you don't, like, put their name and location in the newspaper. It's, like, a thing.
Yeah, no, you don't do that. Like, yeah. You're not, you can't, when there's a child lost in the store, you can't announce the child's name either. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah, typically they have to just use, like, a first initial when they're reporting mm-hmm. on kids and stuff like this. So, finding it even harder to believe right now.
So, Phoebe had this line in the previous scene where they're talking about the demon, and she says that an albino demon with whirling eyes sounds like a whole chapter in the Book of Shadows to her, when it's literally a paragraph on a page about something else. Does she even read this fucking book, or is she just trying to get her sisters to put her sword drawings on the fridge? Like, I don't.
And you know they're not there. They could be more supportive of her. Might even say they're gaslighting her. You might say that if you're playing our bingo game right now. So, Prue is at work, finally. I mean, God, do you even do anything for that paycheck, Prudence? But she's at work. She gets confronted by Eric, the reporter. He says that he's alternative press, which to me means, like, bullshit tabloid, like 25 cents, like this paper is not of quality.
Fake news. You know? Fake news.
Yeah. Basically. So he's like the, like, proto MAGA station or whatever. Yeah, he tells her that he knows she can do magic. She denies it, and then he just breaks her shit. And then he drops that he knows she's involved in a bunch of unsolved murder cases.
So,
they throw that shit in their face a lot, though. Like, anytime they're about to be, like, exposed, unsolved murder cases.
Lots of unsolved investigations.
Which to me, like, I don't know. Like, I'm actually maybe accidentally about to get a little bit serious. But, like, I just don't think unsolved murders in San Francisco is, like, as big of a thing as they make it out to be in this show. Like, you know there's gotta be tons of them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the cops do not theoretically or actually solve, like, every murder that happens. That's just, no police department in America has 100% solve rate, you know? Like, that's not how that works. So, I don't know. I think it's kind of copaganda, actually, to pretend.
Copaganda.
Are you gonna make a jingle for that?
I think I'm going to, yes.
You should. I think it's propaganda to pretend that police departments always solve murder cases the way they kind of pretend that on the show.
I think that's definitely accurate. And also, like, what does it have to do with what she's doing in this moment right now? You know, like, she's at work and you're over here breaking her fucking candy dish.
In Eric's defense, that was an ugly ass candy dish.
I mean, yeah.
She didn't need that. He was really doing her a favor. I think it was just sort of a sly homosexual moment where he was like, yes, I am threatening you a little bit, but honey, we can't have this on your desk. What will your visitors think?
Yeah, that's a candy dish that I would put a charcoal disc in on a cold day and watch it explode.
Okay.
That happened to me one time. I was burning incense in, like, a glass ashtray, and I had salt down and I had my disc on top of it, and then, like, a cold breeze blew in and the ashtray fucking exploded.
Whoa. intense. No wonder you're so concerned about fire safety.
Yeah, one time I accidentally almost set my fucking pride flag on fire.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's unacceptable. We don't want to be that flaming.
Phoebe goes to see Brent, the blind child victim extraordinaire that she met on the web. He makes uncomfortable jokes about his disability, and Phoebe lets her foot live in her mouth throughout this whole visit. Kind of like Blanche in every episode where there's a disabled person in the Golden Girls.
Oh my god.
Where she always says the exact wrong thing.
Wow. Too real. Yeah. Too real.
Rest in peace, Betty White.
Aww.
So Phoebe's like, let's get down to it and tell me about that time you got kidnapped by those pasty white dudes. He tries to kick her out, but she gives this impassioned speech that really doesn't make any sense at all. But whatever. Brent describes being abducted by the two pedophiles and being in a storm drain and losing his sight. And then he heard them say something about auras, which is really not a lot of information to go on. And it almost feels like maybe we're going to get this exact same piece of information later, and it's still not going to do anything.
Well, it was important that he brings up auras because the Book of Shadows, as per huge, sucks. But we'll get to that in a second. So then, of course, we have this cutaway scene. An innocent black man gets murdered on the street by the Grimlocks. Jesus Christ, Grimlocks, if you keep this up, you're going to put the SFPD out of a job.
Apparently, the Grimlocks hunt, like, Pennywise.
Yeah, from the sewers.
I'm surprised they didn't have a little red balloon.
God, it's almost like, it's so, like, trite and blah for us to even bring this up right now. But yes, once again, we have one black actor. Well, other than Daryl Morris, I guess. We have two black actors in this episode, but one of them is a throwaway character who gets murdered immediately.
Yeah, he doesn't even have a line.
He doesn't even have a line.
That character is just in there to die. Kudos to that actor for getting some work. But, what the fuck, Charmed? So, we just want to point out again that the Book of Shadows sucks.
It sucks balls.
It's not organized well. But, I mean, I guess that happens when you, like, pass it down from generation to generation and you add to it all willy-nilly. This is why I advocate for the binder method, because you can just rearrange some shit.
Just rearrange your shit. Don't make it complicated. When your descendants are out there hunting demons, you don't want them to have to, like, research all this stuff on auras. Because you know, if your descendants are anything like you, they're going to be fucking screw-ups who can't draw swords for shit and can't memorize a goddamn thing they read.
The Grimlocks do not have their own entry.
Even though they're this entire race of demon that's, like, important in the hierarchy or whatever, but it's fine.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, but I guess maybe it's because they're, like, one of many demons that feed on auras or that use auras to fucking be evil. I don't know.
They have their own vanquishing potion. So you're telling me that you look up auras and then you read about what Grimlocks are and then there's a potion to deal with them all on the auras page? That's just not good planning.
No, it's really not.
It's not. It's not.
It's not. They don't have their own entry. And we don't actually learn anything from this page. But Piper finds the Grimlocks and says they steal children's sight to see the auras of good people, to strangle them, just like we saw with this guy. The book says that they can be vanquished with a potion of Sashandra root.
But I do want to bring up that when the Grimlocks reappear in season 3, the vanquishing potion has like 17 ingredients and apparently takes 5 hours to make.
So Sashandra root is one of those like hokey herbs that people take in capsules. Sashandra is actually a berry that's loaded with antioxidants, which is great for having your body not burn itself up from the inside. We love those. It's sometimes used for aid in like physical or sexual performance. So magically you could use it for things like sex and vitality magic. From what I can tell though, the berries are red and the potion that they make from it is green and looks like STI discharge.
It looks like something that the Nickelodeon channel would throw on you.
Yeah, it's just, it's gross looking, and it's not the right color for what these berries look like. I also read some information that, like, Sashandra berries, rather, are, like, native to China, and they're sometimes called, like, the five flavor berry because they encapsulate all five flavor notes.
Oh, shut up!
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I've actually had that because I love Eastern honey teas. And I had a jar of five flavor berry tea.
Oh.
At one point. And it was really fucking good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've had the berries.
So I apparently have had Sashandra berry. However, it did not make me more vital or sexual. So
you should get a refund.
So who wants to learn about these goddamn Grimlocks?
Wrong.
I can't think of a million reasons. Mm-hmm. You're
The first use of the word Grimlock comes from Advanced Dungeons & Dragons in 1989. This was the second version of D&D, and the Grimlocks have existed in every version of D&D since. Now, Phoenix has no fucking clue what I'm talking about, but if any of you out there listening are really fucking cool like me, you spent a lot of your teenage years playing D&D. Yeah. Listen, I was at least cooler then than I am now, so I'm gonna need you to shut the fuck up, Beavis. Okay.
What the?
In the world of D&D, Grimlocks are a species of blind, monstrous humanoids who live underground in a place called the Underdark, which is a large, dark, scary cave system. The Grimlocks of D&D were actually inspired by the Morlocks from H.G. Wells' 1895 novel The Time Machine and its subsequent sequels, most of which were written by other people. The Morlocks are a monstrous race of pale-skinned, light-sensitive humanoids who live in underground caves and abduct surface-dwelling people to kill and eat them. I think it's pretty much impossible that the Grimlocks of Charmed are not direct literary descendants from this line, which I actually think is pretty cool. You know, I think a lot of people might look at something like this and say, oh, they're just copying, they're just stealing, or whatever. But I think that it's actually an interesting example of, like, how myths and stories... So, I mean, we're talking about something that was invented by H.G. Wells over 100 years ago, and then we're seeing that myth, that mythological creature, evolving throughout various sources of media, and it just happens to exist in the Charmed universe. I think it's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. I did not know any of that because I am not a super huge fucking nerd.
I guess we could mention that Grimlock is also a character in the Transformers universe. He's like a big robot who turns into like a big fucking robot. I don't know, man.
See, no, I'm not a Transformers fan. I'm not a D&D person. My nerdery and my geekdom is like very specific stuff. And it's almost all like magic and fantasy things, but I just never got into tabletop games. So I don't have a lot to say about the Grimlocks information. I only know them from Charmed. I do think that they're scary and I would not want to meet one. But if I did, I would hope that I'd have some of those fucking five flavor berries to throw at their face.
Or to just be really powerful when you have sex with them.
I would not have sex with a Grimlock.
I mean, I want to say same, but I don't know if the atmosphere was right. Like maybe if like instead of a sewer, we were in like a cemetery. I just thought that this information was really cool because I'm so used to delving into like ancient mythology when we talk about this stuff, but this one really connected to me because I was obsessed with the most recent film adaptation of The Time Machine. I thought it was really, really good. And of course I had this experience playing D&D as a teenager. And well, sort of also like last year, my whole house was quarantined together for 2 weeks and we played some fucking D&D. Okay.
That's fair.
It's totally fair. Yeah. I just thought it was really neat that like this myth would connect to like stuff I enjoyed from my childhood rather than like stuff from 2000 years ago, you know?
That is a really cool observation. And it was also really cool to be able to talk about something in Mythtaken that wasn't totally incorrect and wrong.
Yeah, I don't really see it that way. Mm-mm. I see it as more of like an homage.
Yeah, actually. Absolutely. And I think that there are enough similarities to its origin that we can chalk this up to like Charmed actually doing a little bit of research in it.
I think that we have to consider that one of the writers on this episode was also a big fucking D&D nerd. Like that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
That's very possible. That is very possible. Let's talk about auras. In this episode, a golden aura surrounds good people, and apparently with stolen children's eyesight, Grimlocks can see it and use the energy to kill the person with the aura. That's just really complicated, and I don't really understand that, but Charmed...
It's a bit much.
It is a bit much. Charmed mentions the word aura every now and then, and it usually describes a purely visual effect of a person being surrounded by some color of light, but never ever does the show delve into what that means. According to the Oxford Dictionary, an aura is a supposed emanation surrounding the body of a living creature and regarded as an essential part of the individual. The emotional, mental, and spiritual levels form an energy field around the body known as the aura. The Charmed Book of Shadows describes auras as the soul energy that every human possesses. Its strength is determined by the amount of goodness a person creates, and that's a little morally superior.
Oh, it's totally morally superior.
Don't really care for that. So in occultism, auras usually come up in aura reading and aura photography. There are also some spells out there to create the desired aura for yourself. I have an aura cleanse spell. But I sort of find the concept of auras to be a little too hippy-dippy for me. But I do sometimes use the word in reference to a person's energy, the vibrational feeling I get around someone. I find the idea that an aura has a color or that a person can physically see that color to be a little bit silly. But I won't dismiss it completely. Just because it doesn't resonate with me doesn't mean that it's not valid for other people. But I prefer the terms like energy field or energetic body. But I don't think that you could use that to strangle someone. I would just use piano wire like any self-respecting person.
Yeah, or like a heated garrote. Jesus, what are we, animals? Normally, when you like read about stuff with auras in occult books, you're typically talking about the idea that some people can physically see the color of an aura around someone. So I think it was interesting that that was specifically like something you had a problem with. And that's pretty typical of when like aura reading shows up in fantasy works too. Exactly what we just described is a power that the vampire Armand has in Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles. He can see the colors of people's auras. And then Min in the Wheel of Time series, she can see colors and also pictures in people's auras that she like predicts their futures with. Stuff to do with auras is actually pretty common in fantasy writing.
Yeah.
And I think that all bases back to like actual occult practices. But I do have to side with you that I am at least, you know, I'm a very suspicious person. I have a Scorpio moon and a Scorpio rising, and I don't fucking trust any of you motherfuckers. But I do get extra suspicious when people are like talking about like reading auras and like seeing it and stuff, and I just get very like, you don't fucking know me.
It's like your aura is very like sunsetty. It's like a sunset. And yeah. I'm like, that's because it's 5 p.m., bitch. Like—
However, I do think the concept of aura is useful in some kinds of, like, spell work or, like, I don't know, just however you're trying to, like, cultivate your image. I would fall in more of the camp of, like, doing a spell to affect my own aura than trying to read somebody else's.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess what I said sounded a little bit harsh, but, like, I don't resonate with that sort of idea. I definitely think that you can pick up on a person's energy and pick up on a, like a physical resonance, but I don't think it's something that like you can actively look at and see. And I don't think that you can look at me and see that my solar plexus chakra isn't rotating. Like I don't, that's not.
Oh, honey, I can see that from here. But your root chakra is a little overactive. Okay.
Yeah, I don't resonate with that. And that's not to say that it's not a valid practice, that people can't do it. It's just not something that I really go along with. When I think of an energetic field, I think of vibration. I think of electromagnetism and like.
So I definitely think that you don't even have to be a witch to kind of pick up on the type of energy that people are putting off. And I think that a lot to do with talking about auras is related to that. So, this will surprise no one since I just revealed my Scorpio side, but there are two kind of auras that I try to cultivate of myself, depending on the situation. I mean, the first one is an aura of invisibility. There are times when I just try not to be noticed because I don't want anybody to, like, fucking talk to me or more specifically, ask me for help. And there are times when I try to cultivate an aura of fear because I want people to be intimidated by me and also not fuck with me and typically not ask me for help.
Well, I feel like that maybe stems from some psychological issues that you may have.
Well, you know what? It probably does, but fuck you for saying so.
No, but I think thinking of it that way, if we translate auras into the kind of energy you get from a person, that I'm a little more in tune with, because I just practice things from a very intentional and observable place, and I can't observe that your aura is fuchsia, okay? I can't look at you and know that. I can look at you and say, you look fucking pissed and I don't want to talk to you.
We're in danger of treading into a whole nother subject here, but color psychology, as someone who minored in art, color psychology is like a big part of magic for me.
Yeah, me too.
So I almost wonder if, like, when people are saying your aura is this color, do they mean that they're physically seeing that color, or do they mean that they're picking up a vibe and this is what that color represents to them?
I don't disagree with anything in this episode, but I just feel like it's not presented in a way that, like, makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, for certain. But when is it, you know?
I'm glad that we had this opportunity to expand upon that. If someone watched this episode and were like, oh no, I better start being a fucking bitch so the Grimlocks don't get me, I don't think you have to worry about that.
I, on the other hand, completely support you in your endeavor.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Prue barges into the manor and makes it all about her. And Piper says they should just let everyone find out that they're witches. And Phoebe's like, well, that won't work out well for either of you in about 2 years. So,
you know, because one of them's going to die.
So Piper says that she's going to go see the bait bus guy, who is an architecture teaching assistant. And apparently that means that he'll have maps of the storm drains and sewer systems, because that's something that you take into account when you design a building.
I'm almost certain that's how that works. Yes.
I don't know. And that's too straight for me.
No, it's hard. It's straight up bullshit. But, you know, she just needed to see Josh again or whatever.
Yeah. Well, they had to get the episode moving. So this fucking fake news reporter MAGA guy, Eric, goes to see Andy.
Have you ever noticed that whenever we don't like someone, they become a Republican?
Yes. He tells Andy that Prue has powers, and Andy's like, witchcraft. And Andy assigns himself to the kidnappings, because I guess that's just a thing that cops can do. They can just be like, hey, I'm gonna investigate this thing instead of the murder that is actually within my department of the law.
Yeah, I was gonna make a joke about, like, lazy cops and how if I was a cop, I would just assign myself to nothing and, like, get paid to do nothing. And then I was gonna say that I would do that like any police officer who, you know, just got put on a paid 3-month leave for killing an innocent black man. Right. So Piper lies to her boyfriend so that she can steal something that he should not even have, which I guess makes it all fair. And then he drops a bomb on her. She's like, I don't want to bang right now. And he's like, marry me or I'm fucking moving. And she's like, are you going to get that phone call? I hear it ringing. Well, bye.
This scene is bonkers. And there's really no chemistry between Piper and Josh. Probably because he does so much porn, but
yeah, probably because he's not, like, blindfolded and she's not a man.
Yeah, like, he's not blindfolded and, like, getting blown by a twink in the back of a cargo van. Like, there's just nothing, there's no connection there, you know?
Although she does have that van. She does have that van. So maybe she's just not putting her all into it.
But I'm glad that that scene's over, because I really don't like them together, to be honest. But Phoebe goes to see Brent again, and they have the exact same conversation.
The exact same conversation.
It's the exact same thing. Okay, I want to talk about something really quick, because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I don't think it's in this scene. There's a time, maybe it is in this scene, I think it's right before she has her vision. she asks Brent a question, and he's like, oh, I don't fucking know, I don't remember that. That was a long time ago, and it was scurry. She's like, ugh. And she says something, and she's like, oh, you're disappointed. And she's like, no, not at all. And he's like, well, someone that could see your face might believe you. But I don't think poker is Phoebe's game, because her face was clearly disappointed. And I think her face gave her away more than her voice. So I don't understand this line.
I don't know. I just think they thought they were... Do you think, like, any actual blind people were consulted in the writing of this script?
Mm-mm.
Because probably not.
No, absolutely they were not.
Probably not. And actually, can we just, like, break down and talk about that for a second? Like, so Phoenix and I have a lot of thoughts about this.
Mm-hmm.
So Brent as a blind character. Do we have a lot of other blind characters after this, I know that we have some people get, like, temporarily blinded, but...
I don't think so.
I don't think we have any just blind people other than Brent. I have mixed feelings about this representation, which I can't resolve for you all until we get to the end of the episode. Overall, for the most part, I think it's kind of good. Like... Mm-hmm. Brent is, like, interesting and kind of courageous, and he has a tragic backstory, but he's, like, you know, really risen up and made something of himself, which is such, like, a capitalist value of labor or whatever, but just bear with me for a second. He designs software for blind people, and he has enough money to take care of himself, and he has a cute dog. So I don't think this representation of disability is terrible for now.
Yeah, I think Brent as a blind person is, like, I don't want to say, like, a pinnacle of that community because I obviously don't know.
Yeah, well, no, neither of us know.
But from the outside, it seems like he's a well-functioning, successful man that happens to be blind.
He's not helpless. He's an integral part of the story. He's not a throwaway character.
Exactly. He's a well-developed, fully formed character that's useful to the story. He's not Daredevil, but, like, still, he's cool.
And he's someone that, like, Phoebe relates to with, like, genuine empathy.
Yeah, even though she says the wrong thing at every point in this episode, she's, like, trying. But I think that's kind of true to form, too. Like,
well, and yeah, I think that's very... Phoebe, and also relatable to have the best of intentions and still be kind of a screw up about it.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Absolutely. And he has a braille map of the area that he disappeared in.
Did people just collect maps in the 90s? Because, like, everyone in this episode has a map.
Yeah, I don't know. I just use Google.
And, like, everywhere they go, people have maps. Professor Crazy Eyes had maps. Why?
I don't know. I guess you, like, needed them before you had GPS in the palm of your hand, you know?
It's just, like, it's a little... I know I said this was a good ensemble episode because they all split up and have their own shit going on, but I guess it's a little ridiculous that both Piper and Phoebe go on separate quests to get two different maps. Now, this really is some D&D shit.
We have this little throwaway scene with the kids being annoying and helpless and useless, and I don't care about it. I would agree with the Grimlocks in telling them to shut up, because that's disturbing my peace and I don't have time for it. Prue's talking about making potions on the phone with Piper when Andy shows up for a little bit of drama. And they have this really serious conversation that accomplishes nothing. And Prue is like, my life is just so complicated. Andy is like, I want to be Avril Lavigne.
I love Avril Lavigne.
This whole scene, it accomplishes virtually nothing. They're just like, they have that, like, back and forth where Prue is like, my life is just so complicated. And Andy is like, but I want to be complicated. And Prue is like, but my life is just so complicated.
And then Andy's like, I know, bitch, because you say that to me every episode. I know.
Yeah, just over and over and over again, they chase each other in circles, and it accomplishes nothing, and we move on. And Phoebe is on the go, yet again, but she doesn't even have a car. How's she getting everywhere?
I don't know. I don't know how she gets everywhere. Because, like, San Francisco is kind of big.
It's, like, kind of big, and Uber was not a thing.
Oh my god, is Phoebe, like, taking taxis to, like, weird sewer drain entrances?
that would be so expensive.
Yeah, it sounds like some shit she would do. So... Eric, the MAGA reporter, plays this trick on Prue and Piper where he pushes a baby carriage into the street and Piper freezes it and they figure it out, but then Piper fucks it all up with her purse and it's on camera or whatever.
That proves nothing.
No, nothing whatsoever.
I mean, have you ever heard of jump cuts? You can do that shit on iMovie.
Basically.
Like, that you have nothing. You prove nothing with that videotape.
Well, I mean, he's proven it to himself, and he uses it to threaten them, like any good Trump supporter would do. I mean, reporter. I don't know. What are we talking about?
So they fill in Phoebe about the reporter just before he breaks into their fucking house to do it himself. I feel like these moments, though, with this reporter guy are, like, kind of charmed iconic. Like, these are scenes that I think about, like Prue flattening his tire with a screwdriver, them freezing the baby stroller, maybe because it's in the credits for so long, the freezing of the baby stroller.
There are a lot of scenes from this episode that stay in the credits for the next two seasons. So I think, obviously, the creators really liked the filmography that they accomplished in this one.
Oh, absolutely. I meant to mention this in the beginning, and I might say it again, but Prue's power coming from her hands looks so much better than it did when she squinted her eyes.
It does. It looks so much better.
And you know what I think it is? I think it's because the wave of the hand distracts from the pull of the wire.
Well, I think it's always choreographed so well. But, like, the thing with her eyes, though, like, it was always, like, let's show her face, and while she squints, let's zoom in on her eyes every time. And it kind of takes you out of the action.
Yeah.
Whereas the waving of the hand being well-timed with the pull of the wire draws you into the action.
This episode, I mean, there's a lot of pivotal points as far as, like, plot and stuff is concerned. But I think it's a turnaround for the show as a whole. Because from this point on, there's really only maybe 3 or 4 bad episodes in the show.
In the storm drain, Piper is a massive klutz and falls in a hole.
That is, like, the second biggest hole I have ever seen. And it's maybe, like, the second worst hole in this episode.
Yeah. Possibly one of Phoenix's holes. It's unclear.
I resent that. I'm not into fisting, okay?
Well, if there's one leg up I have on you, I can guarantee I'm tighter. So Phoebe hides the body. I mean, covers the hole that Piper fucking fell in with, like a giant piece of plywood or something.
Yeah, why is that down there? Why is that down
there? I mean, you can find anything in the sewers. And then she just bails. I mean, she takes off to call for help.
I want to know why you would go down there with a flashlight when you're trying to be sneaky.
Well, I mean, so, like, they're using what I call, like, the Buffy lighting.
You know? Yeah. Where it's, like, blue.
You know, because, like, because Buffy is visually not a dark show, and it takes place at night with no lights a lot of the time, so they have this effect where you can tell it's dark, but you can still see what's going on the screen. Mm. So realistically, that sewer would not be as easy to see in as it is for us to watch it on the screen. They would have to have a flashlight, or it would just be ridiculous.
Okay, fair. That's fine. Whatever. I'll let it go. So Andy goes to see Brent, who tells him where the sisters are going. Fucking snitch.
Seriously. Talk to spirits, not cops. Oh my god.
But it's funny because Andy goes and he's like, has a Prue Hollowell come to see you? Because he's still thinking that everything is all about Prue.
Because isn't it usually?
Because, I mean, usually it is. She's the one that comes up all the time. Maybe it's just because, you know, that's his ex. So he always focuses in on her. But no, it was Phoebe, not Prue. And Andy's like, interesting. I don't care about her.
So Prue is in the middle of brewing the potion. She says, I feel like I should be cackling, which I love that line. So iconic.
It's such an
iconic think that
line.
Same thing all the time when I hear about COVID deniers getting COVID. But when Phoebe calls, the potion is suddenly done and already in jars, even though she did not do that. But that rascal Eric has disabled her car. Oh my god. What a straight man thing to do. You know she can't fix that shit. She only knows how to break things. So Prue tells him she's a witch and they go on a field trip together. The literal only goof that I have caught in this whole episode appears here. When Prue is on Eric's camera, you can see studio lights and an actor's chair on the side of the house.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I didn't notice
yeah,
that.
Well, IMDb noticed it for me, but
oh.
it is there. But there's I couldn't find any other goof. So this is the first episode in which the sisters make a vanquishing potion. So I want to fucking talk about potions.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk about potions.
Phoenix, do you make potions?
I guess, yeah. I'm not, like, an expert potion maker by any means. A lot of the potions that I make are in the form of, like, infusion oils that I use to, like, dress candles or add to spell work. Sometimes I'll make, like, different kinds of infused waters, and I'll make potions like that. Sometimes I'll use bases of wine if I want to do something specific. I know of a really fun potion where if you soak wormwood in red wine for a few days, you can fucking trip balls.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, you can.
How would we even define a potion? Etymologically, I wonder if etymology is on the bingo card you're looking at. Etymologically, potion and poison come from like the same root word, which is interesting because you think of one as something to kill and one as something to cure. But the concept is really pretty similar. And as we know, like a lot of medicinal herbs are toxic in the wrong levels and a lot of poisons can heal in the right levels. And I feel like I'm definitely on a fucking tangent right now because I am drinking some witch's brew, which is a mulled wine, which you might call a potion.
I would say that a potion would be a combination of ingredients for a magical use in a liquid base. So yeah, because when I think about potions, a lot of the time I think of Charmed and vanquishing potions.
Yeah.
Right. Because at a certain point they stop doing spells and then just make potions for fucking everything. And then they switch back and they do spells for everything. And then they switch back and they do potions for everything. And sometimes you need a potion and a spell at the same time and it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. But it's fucking epic when you do.
Yeah.
I think it gets a little lame when they just throw vanquishing potions all the time and like everything is like instantly defeated by the shatter of a glass vial.
For me, potions took me a long time to get into, A, because I didn't have access to herbs that I wanted to use, and secondly, because I thought about Charmed, and I didn't think that potions could be a real thing. But really, when you think about it, like, I put herbs into grapeseed oil to dress my candles. That's a potion. And I know one of our listeners, Artemis Moonchild.
What a fabulous name.
Has, like, an online shop where they sell a lot of potions that they make. They're making potions.
Interesting.
All the time. They make potions with, like, glitter in them that look beautiful, and I would love to use. They're not even asking me to plug them right now, but I just think that the stuff that they make is really cool. So check.
I love glitter.
So check them out, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, so potions, I think, definitely are a very real thing. It's just like breaking down that like fact from fiction.
So my experience with potions mostly revolves around three things, which is medicinal teas, perfumes, and aquavits. And I'm not even sure I'm saying that right. So we're very into medicinal teas in my house. My roommate David is more of an expert on the medicinal uses of herbs than I am. But you've probably heard me brag that we have this like very impressive herb cupboard that has nearly everything you can fucking think of in it. And he's very good at knowing like the actual documented medicinal uses of herbs. So I have some potions in my Book of Shadows that I call potions, but are really just like actual effective herbal remedies that I make as teas. I do that a lot. We are sort of into making perfumes for different occasions, and sometimes they just smell nice. But so we'll take like essential oils and you mix them with like Everclear and put it in a spray bottle.
Oh.
And we've made some very good smelling stuff, but it's cool because you can pick out like herbs for their magical uses and literally make like a magical perfume. Of course, my favorite magical perfume right now is Love Spell by Victoria's Secret because that shit smells so good. The last one is aquavits. So an aquavit is basically an herbal infused vodka.
Oh.
And I learned about this a couple of years ago when I was writing a midsummer ritual for my coven, or a litha ritual, I should say. And I learned that in Sweden, midsummer is very important, and they usually celebrate by drinking aquavit. And I think it's typically elderberry that they use in them. And like just like buying aquavits is way more common there than it is here. But I decided that we would try making some. And it is so good, girl. So we made these two aquavits the first time we did it. And I can't remember exactly what herbs that we used, but I know they were completely different. And I just remember one of them had cinnamon stick and honeybush in it.
Ooh.
And it was so delicious. So you just like put the herbs in the vodka and let it sit for like at least 2 weeks. And then you just drink it.
I would never do that because I don't drink alcohol, but...
Oh, well, if you're a big fucking drunk like me, it is just the best potion. Okay. Let me just tell you. So apparently I mostly think of potions as something to drink, but that doesn't necessarily have to be true. It can also be, you know, something you spray on yourself or something you use to dress candles or something that you use to blow up your enemies. Whatever.
So Prue and Phoebe go into the sewers and they tell fucking Maggot to stay behind. And he doesn't.
Yes. Yeah.
So a Grimlock finds Piper in this giant fucking hole and is about to kill her. But Prue shows up and knocks him down with a big ass pipe. It looks really cool. The way that she throws
it
the pipe.
It does look really cool.
It looks really cool.
It looks really fucking cool. And that scene is also in the opening credits for the next two seasons.
Oh yeah, it is, isn't it? There's a lot going on right now. Andy shows up and it's like really chaotic and there's lots of jumpy cuts because Charmed is really bad at editing. Eric gets killed by this Grimlock. Serves him fucking right for not listening, but, you know, she was a woman, so he didn't want to listen to her. So he dies, and Prue lifts Piper out of this hole, and they take her topside. They run into Andy, who uselessly shoots a Grimlock, and Prue tosses him around.
And then Andy is like, Ermergerd, sure's her word.
They make Andy take Piper up to the street, and Prue and Phoebe go off to kill the monsters. The first vanquish is, like, it's hysterical.
It is. I really think it's funny in, like, not a stupid way. Because they're all, like, freaking out, and everyone's screaming, and Phoebe's just, like, throwing the potion like she has no fucking idea what she's doing, which she doesn't. It's great. I think it's great.
So I think that the vanquishing effect on the Grimlock looks really cool.
It has this sort of like burned like photograph for too long kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Thing. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Like that's what it's like. But it combined like with the potion splattering, it does look pretty good.
It does look really cool. But I'm just a little confused. because bullets can't kill demons, but apparently they all just have really specific severe allergies.
Basically.
Like, what is this? How does it work? How does it happen? I don't understand.
Yeah, this, like, ball of death traveling faster than a speeding car can't affect you, but God forbid you come into contact with some five-flavor berry.
So fortunately, Prue can just, like, throw stuff with her powers, because after they find the kids, that potion gets knocked on the ground. And this is the part where the Grimlock is like, I'm gonna choke you, and then I'm gonna choke you, but then you're gonna kill me. Prue, like, takes this potion that is on the ground, and she flings her arm, and it kills the other Grimlock. And somehow, this returns the eyesight of the children, but I don't really care about them, so let's move on.
I think we should highlight this moment of Prue, like, throwing the potion off the ground, because she uses it on the Grimlocks the next time they show up. And then there's this moment in season 5 where Paige is feeling like she's not as good as Prue, because she's not. But then she accomplishes the same trick, so it's like, okay, or whatever.
Yeah, that is a moment. And I thought about that when I was watching this episode, actually. I thought about that moment in season 5 when Paige does it for the first time. I feel like it would almost be easier for Paige because of how her power works, but...
Yeah.
You know, whatever. It's fine. Children...
Yeah, so the kids get their sight back, and the sisters prepare to take them to Brokeback Brendan's stable for struggling child actors. But first, the kids all have to be all like, Ermagerd sure's a wirch!
At the cop shop, Andy is rehearsing his latest cover story for his girlfriend's antics. Despite the very real threat of being exposed by these fucking crotch goblins, Piper is just talking about boys. Which, I mean, I relatable, I guess.
Isn't that what we're always doing at the end of the day?
I mean, truly. She's gonna end things with Josh, because she's still hung up on Leo, but Leo's not even there. She can't have Leo. She wants somebody that she can't have. Siren, can you relate to that?
Okay, first of all, ow. But, second of all, what I was gonna say is that I am not like that at all. But I'm probably just cooler with polyamory than 90s Piper is, because...
Yeah.
I just don't think that, like, jonesing for somebody else is a reason that you can't love, you know, someone else.
Yeah. I mean, no, true. I mean...
Well, I mean, and that's literally your life. Like, you're living that.
I am living right that. Right now. I am.
But I would never turn down being with somebody that I liked because I also liked someone else. That's not who I am.
Here's the thing. Like, 99% of interpersonal problems on television shows could be solved with polyamory.
True story. Let's just reshape that whole Twilight saga, okay?
And so it's like, it kind of has to happen, because then what are you watching the show for? I'm personally watching for the show for the explosions and magical powers.
Yeah, and maybe I want to watch Piper get banged by two guys. Did you ever think about that? Season 2? Oh my God.
Yeah, but I mean, polyamory would just, like, it would fix so many problems. I mean, it has.
So there is, like, this fan theory that Piper was thinking about Leo because he showed up briefly to heal her in the sewer. But if so, he didn't do a very good job.
He really did not. I mean, she was pretty fucked up still.
I think I'm going to discount that one. But it is a fan theory, so.
Yeah, so Brent shows up and he can see. How nice. I don't know how to feel about it. I don't, like, part of me feels shitty that I'm like, well, I wish he would have stayed blind. I don't know. It's just really complicated, because it's, like, nice, and it's a nice little bow on the story. But at the same time, it was like, I don't really understand how he got his sight back from this power of the Grimlock steel that only lasts 24 hours, but they happened to him 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think that this is where I get uncomfortable with, like, Brent as a blind character, because he ends as a sighted character. And I guess, okay, so I think that representation of all kinds in media is important, as you know, because you're listening to our fucking podcast, and because I just harp on about it all the fucking time. But, so I don't, does this kill the good that Brent did as representation for blind people?
I don't know. I don't want to say that it it discredits the representation that we got earlier. I just feel like it resolves in a way that makes it seem like being cited is somehow
better.
Yeah.
Right?
Is somehow better.
Like, I don't know. I guess it's complicated because I'm sure that most blind people probably would love to regain their sight or have sight for the first time. But that's something that's not really attainable most of the time. And so is it like a happily ever after kind of ending? Yeah, but I don't know. Like, it's just not, it's not a realistic goal or hope.
Yeah.
For most people who were relating to the character.
Yeah, it just, honestly, when, like, I don't feel that we have the space to be able to talk on it at all. And so I would like to ask if we have any blind or visually impaired listeners to reach out to us and let us know how you feel about it, because I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel about it. I know that it's...
Exactly. And you're exactly right. Like, we can go back and forth about it, but it's not our place to come up with a concrete answer.
Yeah.
To the question of, like, is this okay? What does this mean? And I would love it. I would absolutely love it if any listeners with sight disabilities would reach out to us and tell us what you think.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it on air. Okay, we love to talk about our followers.
Yes, we do. So Prue basically asks Andy if he's going to rat out on her. But it gets interrupted by a flock of reporters for some reason. Well, I guess it was a pretty high coverage case with the kidnappings and whatever. But it just seems a little weird as a way to end an episode.
I think it's like a cliffhanger.
It's a little Law and Order SVU for me.
It is very Law and Order. It's so Law and Order.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know, he, like, turns around, he's facing the cameras and flashing lights, and then we don't know what happens, and then there's this happy flute music that leads us to believe that everything's okay, but shit, you don't know that.
Yeah. So, final thoughts. Do we have any final thoughts about this episode?
No, I just kind of stand by what I said in the beginning about it being a good ensemble episode, an enjoyable episode overall. My final thoughts about the episode, honestly, are how much I am just enjoying doing this podcast with you. Like, I knew it would be awesome when you pitched it to me, but did I think that I would be sitting here talking to my best friend, even though he's miles and miles away, while drinking a nice glass of wine and talking about auras and Dungeons and Dragon mythology and potion making and film studies and feminism and disability representation on TV? Like, I love doing this with you, Phoenix.
Aww.
That is my final thought. Like, honest to goddess.
Why are you being so nice to me? It's weird.
I know. It's also really uncomfortable for me, but my glass is almost empty.
I have really enjoyed doing this project with you, too. I'm having a lot of fun. It seems like other people are enjoying it, too.
Because we're fucking rad.
Our numbers have gone up recently, so thank you for new listeners. Thank you so much if you've been with us from the beginning. We really appreciate you, and I really am glad that we have this project in this space, too. Combine our passions and our spiritual paths. So we did experience some deaths in this episode. And if I had to pick a favorite, my kill of the day would probably be Piper's subscription to the bait bus.
That's not really worth paying for anyway. You can find most of those videos leaked all over the place, Pipes. I know.
Do you have a favorite death?
I really thought you were going to ask if I had like a favorite porn.
I mean, do you have a favorite
website?
Porn?
And I was gonna say Broke Straight Boys, but a favorite death. I love Broke Straight Boys, and it's not because they're straight, because they're not.
They're not.
It's because they're hot. What are we talking about? My favorite death has gotta be Eric, the MAGA reporter. I hate him even more now that I know he's a Trumper.
Yeah, that was a satisfying death, for sure.
It was. Well, he's just kind of a douche. And you know what? Like, the witch queer metaphors aside, if you are out there, like, trying to make your career on outing people, fuck you, and I hope you die in a sewer. Kill
of the day. So, if I had to rate this episode, I really did enjoy it. But if I had to give it a rating, I would give it, like, 20 milligrams twice a day for 10 days. Because that's what the sisters are going to need after walking around the sewers with a jar full of the clap.
Ew.
So,
ew. Do you know what, guys? In lieu of a rating, which I don't have because I didn't come up with one, you know what I want to talk about at the end of the episode, Phoenix? I want to talk about some Witch Bitches review drama.
Drama? Do we have drama?
Yes.
What is drama?
Yes, we do have drama, and I'm going to tell our listeners all about it. Do you know what Phoenix did to me? We were having this personal, private conversation. Okay. About the fact that, yes, there is some guy on Grindr with an adult diaper fetish who won't leave me alone. And Phoenix wrongly said that I had hit rock bottom. And I said, no, rock bottom would be if I met up with the diaper guy. And listen, if any of you out there are into ABDL, I think that's correct. I had to look up what it meant before I could turn this guy down. Okay, but if you're into that, I'm not judging you. I'm just politely telling you, like I did this person, that is not for me. The point is that Phoenix posted a screenshot of this conversation on our official fucking Twitter. Our official fucking Twitter. Okay. So I saw that. I took some time with it to really reflect to choose my words correctly on how I wanted to respond to this. And I said, and I want you guys to know that I meant every word of, I said, I mean this in the nicest way possible, you're a stupid fag and I hope you die.
I didn't even get a chance to look at the tweet that you replied before it got fucking taken down.
So this fascist robot Twitter suspended my account. I was suspended from Twitter for defending myself just because I said, oh, I don't know, some homophobic hate speech. Or whatever.
I did do that. But you read me first. I was just getting you back.
Listen, the point is that Phoenix got me suspended from Twitter. So that's how I would rate this fucking episode, you bitch.
Well, even though you got suspended from Twitter, you're not suspended anymore. So why don't you tell the people where they can find you?
Oh my God, you can follow me on Twitter at Siren Spectacular. Or you can follow my Facebook page, Siren Spectacular, Non-Binary Meme Witch. Or you can watch my Coven's YouTube channel, which has some pretty great videos, even though we may never update it ever again. It's called Millennial Incantations. And I'm super funny in it, just saying.
That is how I met Siren, is through Millennial Incantations. So
it served its purpose.
It did. Now we have this, which is better. You can follow me on Instagram at Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. I very recently posted a picture of myself in my underwear.
What else is new?
You can follow me on Twitter at Phoenix Arcana _. You can follow the podcast at WBRcast on every social media platform, and you better fucking do it. You can send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com if you want to hear us talk about something, or if you want to give your 2 cents about visually impaired representation.
Or if you just want to tell us how much you like us.
Oh, yeah, that too. I need attention. I didn't do well in this episode. I need some help.
You need more help than anyone out there can give you.
I knew you were going to fucking say that as soon as it came out of my mouth. Any fucking way.
Well, it's so weird for anything to come out of your mouth.
Tell these people goodbye.
All right, all you quote-unquote straight porn stars.
Until next time, keep on witching.
And bitching.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?